He could hear his heart thudding in his ears, and he could hear water dripping. The mosquitoes began to whine once more. He realized he was still holding tight to the haft of the spear, although the blade of it was buried deep within the body of the immobile beast. He let go of it and staggered around the beast, looking for Hunter. She was trapped beneath the beast. It occurred to him that if he moved her, pulling her out from under it, he might cause her death. So instead he pushed as hard as he could against the warm, dead flanks of the beast, trying to move it. It was like trying to push start a Sherman tank. But eventually, awkwardly, he tumbled it half off her. Hunter lay on her back, staring up at the darkness above them. Her eyes were open and unfocused, and Richard knew, somehow, that they saw nothing at all. "Hunter?" he said. "I'm still here. Richard Mayhew?" Her voice sounded almost detached. She made no effort to find him with her eyes, no effort to focus. "Is it dead?" "I think so. It's not moving." And then she laughed. It was a strange sort of laugh, as if she had just heard the funniest joke that ever the world told a hunter. And between her spasms of laughter and the wet, racking coughs that interrupted them, she shared the joke with him. "You killed the beast," she said. "So now you're the greatest hunter in London below. The warrior." And then she stopped laughing. "I can't feel my hands. Take my right hand." Richard fumbled under the beast's body and wrapped his hand around Hunter's chill fingers. They felt so small, suddenly. "Is there still a knife in my hand?" she whispered. "Yes." He could feel it, cold and sticky. "Take the knife. She's yours." "I don't want you. Take her." He pried the knife free from her fingers. "She's yours now," whispered Hunter. Nothing was moving, save her lips, and her eyes were clouding. "She's always looked after me. Clean my blood off her, though. Mustn't rust the blade. A hunter always looks after her weapons." She gulped air. "Now touch the beast's blood to your eyes and tongue." Richard was not sure that he had heard her correctly, nor that he believed what he had heard. "What?" Richard had not noticed the marquee approach, but now he spoke intently into Richard's ear. "Do it, Richard. She's right. It'll get you through the labyrinth. Do it." Richard put his hand down to the spear, ran it up the haft until he felt the beast's hide and warm stickiness of the beast's blood. Feeling slightly foolish, he touched his hand to his tongue, tasting the salt of the creature's blood. It did not, to his surprise, revolt him. It tasted utterly natural, like tasting an ocean. He touched his bloody fingers to his eyes, where the blood stung like sweat. Then, "I did it," he told her. "That's good," whispered Hunter. She said nothing more. The Marquis de Carabas reached out his hand and closed her eyes. Richard wiped Hunter's knife on his shirt. It was what she had told him to do. It saved having to think. "Better get a move on," said the Marquis, standing up. "We can't just leave her here." "We can. We can come back for the body later." Richard polished the blade as hard as he could on his shirt. He was crying now, but he had not noticed. And if there isn't any later, then we'll just have to hope that someone disposes of all our remains, including the Lady Dawes, and she must be getting tired of waiting for us. Richard looked down. He wiped the last of her blood off Hunter's knife and put it through his belt. Then he nodded. "You go," said Decarabus. "I'll follow as fast as I can." Richard hesitated, and then, as best he could, he ran. Perhaps it was the beast's blood did it. He certainly had no other explanation. Whatever the reason, he ran straight and true through the labyrinth, which no longer held any mysteries for him. He felt that he knew every twist, every path, every alley and lane and tunnel of it. He ran, stumbling and falling, and still running, exhausted, through the labyrinth, his blood pounding in his temples. A rhyme coursed through his head as he ran, pounding and echoing to the rhythm of his feet. It was something he had heard as a child. "This I night, this I night, every night and all, fire and fleet and candle light, and Christ receive thy soul." The words went around and around, dirge-like in his head. Fire and fleet and candle light. At the end of the labyrinth was a sheer granite cliff, and set in the cliff were high wooden double doors. There was an oval mirror hanging on one of the doors. The doors were closed. He touched the wood and the door opened silently to his touch. Richard went inside.